Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're brought to you by YouBeauty.com and Morning and Night Multivitamins. UDocs at gmail.com, YOUDOCS at gmail.com. What is a super survivor? We'll find out at 35 minutes past the hour this hour with our guest segment. Here's a bit of good news. Dr. Mike here to tell us why. Americans, I understand, are more likely to avoid drinking soda than before. Dr. Mike, why is that? Sounds like a good start.
Well, they're more aware of the hazards of sugar. So Americans are avoiding sugar as well as soda. And that's a great start. But obviously, there are a lot of other things they aren't doing. But if you will, this is a, how do I call it, the best of the starts. Now, let me tell you what the data are.
Sure.
So that we can say it. If you look at it, nearly two-thirds of Americans report avoiding soda in their diet. That's up from 41% in 2002. So 41% were actively trying to avoid soda in 2002. It's now 63%. If you think of that from Coca-Cola's standpoint or Pepsi-Cola's standpoint, that's a huge jump. In fact, only 13% say they don't think about soda, whether they take it in or not, meaning it's fine for them. That's down from 24% a decade ago. So if you were PepsiCo or Coca-Cola or Dr. Pepper, you'd have to say, heck, we've got to change the behaviors again to think about diet soda, or maybe produce more water or other flavored waters or other things, teas and coffees. And all of them are, that is Pepsi and Coke, are both diversifying as well as selling around the world. So this is a big change. Now, if you will, many other things in health aren't changing, but Americans know they should be eating more fruits and vegetables, so they're thinking seriously about eating more fruits and vegetables, but in fact, they aren't eating more fruits and vegetables, so we're not doing better on that, but we are at least thinking about it.
Well, from personal observation, I notice, and it's totally unscientific, that when we go out to a restaurant, I see more and more people with a glass of water. You know, when they bring, can I get you some drinks? Yeah. I see more people with water, so I'm not sure, you know, if that's a majority of people do that, but I do see more of it. One thing that always puzzles me, when I watch NASCAR races, after the NASCAR race, the winner or everybody, all the racers get out and they talk to the reporters about how well they did and the winner of the race. And I notice they're always drinking soda, which is bizarre to me. I just, it doesn't seem right. Now, I don't know if they've got their contracted, I guess, by the soda company maybe to do it, but isn't that weird?
Well, the interesting thing is they probably are contracted by the soda company, meaning either NASCAR has it or someone else has it,
yeah,
where the soda company is a sponsor and gives them money for doing it. The other thing could be, remember, these guys probably, and I don't know this for a fact, but probably have trouble in their race cars with urinating, meaning they can't find a place to urinate regularly inside the car.
I heard it goes out the ashtray.
What?
I heard they use the ashtray. It goes out through the ashtray.
I don't think they can do it at those speeds. So they probably are short of both water and caffeine. They may not have caffeine as they drive around, so because that causes diuresis or causes you to increase your urine. So maybe they're just hungry for that caffeine and water, the two of them together at the end of the race.
No, well, it seems to me after that long race, you're in a car for 4 hours of heat. Obviously, it's hot in those cockpits, even when the temperature is comfortable outside. But when it gets to 95, you know, in some of these cities where they drive in the south, I can't imagine getting out of a car after 4 hours of being in a 120-degree cockpit and having soda. I don't think that would set, physically, I don't think that would set right in my stomach. But it's just strange to me that that they drink it. Just always, I considered it odd. So, before the break, sleeping pills are bad for older adults. How come?
Well, there are two reasons. One, they last a lot longer. Remember, sleeping pills, the difference between men and women was first, it's the first pill with a different dosage for men and women. Women don't metabolize it as well. But in addition, when you get older, you don't metabolize it as well. It hangs around longer. And if you get a usual dose, you may have a hangover the next day, be a little confused the next day, or drowsy, not able to coordinate your walking as well. And so it's associated with falls and increased accidents in the elderly, much more commonly than in young. And those who go to emergency rooms for problems relating to sleeping pills, 32% of them get admitted to the hospital. That's as opposed to about a third of that in the younger age groups. So there appear to be more side effects and more serious side effects, and also an increase in falls and accidents when the elderly get a hold of sleeping pills or use sleeping pills.
Let's talk about Google for a minute till we go to the break at the bottom of the hour. Then our guest talks about super survivors. Google evidently is more than a search engine these days, and apparently their next project is us. And I guess it's called the Moonshot Project. What do you know?
Well, this is almost like the old days of the Medici being the ones who sponsored art. Well, now it is the rich companies seem to be the ones sponsoring science, since we've cut back on NIH funding so much. Maybe that's who's taking over, and that is a very bad sign, if you will, from a standpoint of if they're the only ones. But this is a very interesting project that they are funding. They're trying to find out what is normal cellular function, what is normal in gene function, and how do we stay healthy as we get older. So they're looking at the, if you will, how to keep yourself with a younger real age, and they're doing that by studying 175 people, about half at Stanford and half at Duke, with their genomes, knowing everything about them, knowing everything inside their cells, and then watching what happens to them and studying them very closely to find out what goes wrong, what stays right, and to learn out, in other words, who should drink coffee, who shouldn't. And that has been worked out because of one of these projects, not with the specific Google X project spoken of here, their Moonshot, but with another project that was done with 23andMe that found out that only the fast metabolizers of coffee got a long-term benefit and decreased cancer rates and decreased diabetes rates and decreased mental dysfunction rates. So this holds promise of knowing what is normal for you, what you should avoid, what you shouldn't avoid, by studying everything about these 175 people in the hopes that they can figure out what each person should do to stay at their highest level of functioning.
Everybody is different, though, in terms of their physical makeup and their genetic makeup. Would it be able to be applied in a larger area so that it could help a greater percentage of people?
Well, the hope is that by studying these 175, there'll be enough variation. They will use their search and their large analytics database. They have this huge computational capability at Google. And by doing that, they'll be able to figure out what's good and bad for each genome and genotype. They're taking a wide variety of people. It's not just, they've got to have every gender, every ethnic group, et cetera, and a wide variety that they're going to follow for a long time.
Youdocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. 80% of us suffer trauma in our lifetimes, and many are able to survive and overcome its effects, and those people are called super survivors. What makes super survivors tick, and what makes a super survivor succeed? It's our guest segment after the break on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.